If you have this kind of brand, then what you need to think about is maximize those moments. It is all about, for a brand like that, your ability to generate and capture a whole bunch of demand in a very small period of time. For long-term sustained success in your business, you need to understand what areas of the business you need to develop the most skill in. And that is dependent on what kind of business you are actually running. Today on the Andrew Ferris podcast, I'm going to talk about five different kinds of D2C businesses and help you think through what skills you need to develop if you find yourself in one of them. I think I've covered most of the kinds of businesses that I've come across with these five categories of businesses. I'm going to lay them out for you and tell you exactly what you need to know to maximize your growth, your profitability, and ultimately the value of your company. So I've been thinking a lot recently about not just sort of tactical strategies in a given channel or something like that, but sort of zoomed out a little, thinking about for some of my clients, what once we've sort of mastered quote unquote, once we've, you know, gotten the low-hanging fruit at least off of the key areas of a core strategy and a core channel. Right? So let's meta ads. We're running manual bids. We're producing creative at scale, et cetera. That's going to get you to $10, $15, $20 million in revenue, really good business, strong profitability. You do all the normal stuff, right? You keep OpEx low as a percentage of revenue, all the things we talk about that generally shape a good D2C business and all the ways I talk about all the time. But like, if you want to go from there to $100 million. And even sometimes if you want to get to there, 15, 20 million, something like that, you really need to understand what kind of business you are building and therefore what areas you need to develop either yourself or on your team the most skill set for. And to sort of think through that, what I've been thinking about recently is sort of different kinds of businesses, where these businesses sit in the marketplace, the economics of the business, the way customers interact with products. And in light of that, these might be considered sort of genetic components of the business. Of course, they're all, it's your business. You can change all of these components potentially. But given the business that you have, like, what do you need to do? What efforts do you need to put in to generate a bunch more money? Like, if you step back from D2C for a second, you might think, okay, I, Andrew, run a very small agency. So what are the leverage points in my business to create more revenue? Well, it's going to be really different than a product business. And the way that I generate profit is going to be really different than a product business. And therefore, I'm going to think differently about my skills in relation to this business than I'm going to think about them in relation to, you know, what kind of skills I would need in an e-commerce business. For example, here's an obvious one. I spend $0 on Facebook ads for AJF growth. $0. So whatever I have to say about bid caps has no relevance to the skill set that I need for this business. On the other hand, I think about how do I staff creative at the level I need to generate the outcomes my clients need, and how do I do that in a way that's cost effective to keep the profit healthy in the business, et cetera, right? So those are really, really different kinds of skill sets. And that's sort of an obvious thing. Every business is going to have difference. You could think about a small retail shop, coffee shop would be really different than either of those, et cetera. Okay. But even within D2C, we talk about the idea of D2C or e-commerce as a business. And I'm of the belief that e-commerce, D2C is a business model in its own way. It's at least a starting point. It tells you something about the business. Within that, there are subgroups or maybe subcategories of businesses. And we ought to think carefully about what kind of business you ought to think carefully about what kind of business you're in. And in light of that, where you need to get great. So I think this will make sense as I start to name these. There are probably more than this, but in my experience, I see at least five different kinds of businesses that are D2C businesses and that necessitate different kinds of skill sets. Okay. And I'm going to start with the broadest category. Category number one, I'm going to call the solid margin, solid LTV, solid to good total addressable market kind of product-based business, right? And what I mean here is just this is many, many brands that you deal with are going to fall into this category in some way. You're talking, they're D2C, they know kind of some best practices, they're doing some basic things right, and they realize, okay, we're at 60 plus points of landed margin to the customer, you know, somewhere around 60, give or take 5 points. Being above 60 is really where you start to get towards solid to pretty good margin. And a lot of these brands are going to be, you know, closer to 65, maybe even you get to 70 points of landed margin. So that's a really good margin. But 60 to 65 is a pretty common place for a lot of businesses to be. Okay. We'll call it solid LTV, 50 to 60% increase in value in the year. So what I mean by that is, and I'll keep using the percentages this way. Let's say 60% plus, what I would mean there is that if a customer spends a dollar on their first purchase, or let's make it easier. Let's say they spend $100 on their first purchase, $100 AOV. They're likely to spend on average $60 more with you throughout the year. Okay. So that's what I mean by 60% increase, 60% LTV. Really, we're calling it 1 year LTV. So they may last quite a bit longer than that. All right, so solid margin, solid LTV, and then we'll say good TAM. I don't have a way to measure this, but total addressable market being pretty good, where you know there's a broad range of people that you can address. Again, this is many, many brands, just making products for mass markets that are pretty good. They're unspectacular in each of these categories, but they are pretty good, and therefore they have the core of what you would just say is sort of baseline of pretty good e-commerce business. You just think about this, right? Solid margin, solid LTV like that. And again, you keep your OPEX low as a percentage of revenue. You do all those things and you've got the basic financial core of a pretty good business. A lot of businesses work this way. And I would call this kind of business like the steady brand builder kind of business. And typically what that means is that a brand like this is not going to have crazy overnight success in most cases if they're running D2C. They don't have some insane growth trajectory because they don't have the margin or the LTV to justify huge, huge amounts of investment in growth, but they can justify good investment in growth because they have good margin and good LTV and there's a good amount of customers to reach and create awareness with and all those kinds of things. And so what do you do if you have this kind of business? Well, you do all of the stuff as well as possible across a broad range of stuff. And what I mean by the steady brand builder here is year over year, you keep trying to add another $5 million in revenue in the early stages, maybe, you know, 3 to 5 million every year, something like that. You go from 2 to 5 to 10 to 15. Maybe at some point you start getting the percentage goes down, but the revenue comes up. So you're doubling, you know, each year for a couple of years. In the early stages, you're picking low hanging fruit, all those kinds of things. And then you're adding another 20% growth year over year over year. And you do that for 10 or 20 years and you end up with a really, really good business. It's really hard to go rocket ship growth in this business, but it is possible to keep adding. And in this business, what you want to do is just keep doing everything a little better all the time. This is like a classic case of be a little better every day in a business like this. Just like keep running ads that get a little better every day. Start noticing what creative works, produce more of it. Start producing more creative in general. Make sure you're running manual bids. Make sure you're, you know, leaning on machine learning, all the stuff I talk about, kind of the basic things there. So you get that spend up to $200,000, $300,000 spend per month. And now you've got a $2 to $3 million ad spend that's happening every year on your Meta ads as the baseline for that. You build a good Google ad campaign on the back of that. You're running good email and SMS and you're thinking better about those all the times. Your marketing calendar, as you're able to, creates more and more value. You're producing products, you're having some sales, you're staying lean, you're really careful about staying lean on the business because you don't have super mega fast growth and you can't just, you know, power it to the moon and go really, really super aggressive because you're growing so fast. You know, you keep chipping away at the margin and supply chain and your demand plan. You get better and better at managing all those things. You just do all the little things well over a long period of time. And, you know, every time your business gets a little bit bigger, you go back to your manufacturer and say, we want better terms. And you shorten your terms, all of those things. And in some businesses, no, like all of those things are true for every business, right? But there is a way in which a business like this gets a little better all the time and keeps creating more value. And you just don't have as good of a case in this business to go like slam all of your energy and resources into one particular thing. In this case, you just want to make everything a little bit better all the time. And that ends up being how you grow. Now, again, that's true for a lot of businesses, but especially in this case, you're just looking for the next opportunity next and you're trying to fix it and keep on going. Probably can in this business run some sales and should run some sales. You know, this is part of the way you're going to turn that 60% LTV into 65 or 70 or something is by just, you know, and maybe even more doing that. That also, you may be able to maintain customers for a longer period of time. So it might be 60% LTV in a year, but by year two, that 60 might turn into 100. Like you might not churn customers so fast as you keep producing products and sales and reasons for people to come back. And in that respect, that's another reason why the growth curve can be like a little bit more, less extreme, but can be a very long and continuous one. Because customers do this. And there's a particular, new products are a big part of that. And there's a particular kind of brand that I think often fits this mold, and that is an apparel brand. Apparel brands are some of the top ones like this. They're not the only ones. There's other brands that are just releasing a lot of different products across the different categories of products. And for those brands, They can have a very similar thing. But apparel brands are a classic example of this. You just keep releasing products, and the more you can produce products, the more you can chip away at your return rate, the more you can run sales, the more you can do a great job with email and SMS, the more you can keep working with your factories to get your demand planning dialed in, you can set the foundation to just keep steadily growing. And this is also where, you know, other ad channels start to make more sense over time. You know, you get influencer going and you think about customer content producing other things for you. And organic can grow and grow and grow steadily as you keep producing product that people like and keep producing reasons for people to come and just check out what's going on your Instagram and all those kinds of things. So it's not going to be like organic is going to power your business massively in most cases. Instead, it's just going to be another touch point. It's a good quality touch point for your customer as you keep producing over time. And I've seen apparel businesses produce very large aggregate LTVs. You know, I'll talk more about subscription businesses in a second, but when subscription businesses have customer churn, those customers very often just don't come back. They're done. They have a life cycle and they're done. They may be a longer life cycle, but they're done. Apparel businesses, you'll see, keep customers for long. I mean, think, how long have you been buying clothes from your favorite clothes retailers, whether it's, you know, a brand like, you know, whatever, one of the big ones, Nike or whoever, Lulu or something, right? Or it's just, you've been going to the Gap for 20 years or something, you know, like people have very long life cycles on apparel brands and on some of these. And so the LTV doesn't have the cutoff point that others do, as long as the brand keeps producing products, keeps running sales and give people a reason to come back. And so again, you get better and better over time. That produces some margin expansion. It's just a longer game of continuous optimization as opposed to a put your pedal to the metal on one core tactic. So that's what we'll start there. This is kind of my catch-all bucket for a lot of brands. And if you're a brand with like 40 points of LTV and 50 points of margin, maybe the next thing you need to be thinking about is, ooh, I need to get that 40 points of LTV to become 50 or 60, or, and I need to get my margin from 50 to 60. And that's a product development issue. That's a pricing and offer issue. There's a bunch of things you could be thinking about there to try to solve those problems, which will make it so that all of the things that I just talked about produce larger benefits over a longer period of time, right? Because if you run your sale, if you release your next product and you have, 50 points of margin, even let's say you have 60 points of margin instead of 50, boy, that's just like a whole bunch more profit that you can generate off of that next product or off of that sale by just having more margin to begin with. And it produces more value over time. It makes your cash flow easier, all those things. Okay. So there's number one. A lot of brands fit this. Maybe there's a second category as well that we might say is like another subcategory. If apparel is one of them, you might make something like skincare or other personal care products somewhere fit into here. Often the margin's a little better. It's not 60 points, it's 65, 70, even 75 points sometimes, especially in skincare, something like that. LTV there goes from 60 points to 70 to 80, something in that range. Again, a lot of personal care brands kind of fit in here. And in this case though, the product development is less obvious. At some point you've sort of generated a lot of the products that you're going to generate. You can't just endlessly create new designs like you can in apparel. And the TAM, and these categories are also so competitive. People can sometimes be brand loyal in them. You know, to use a skincare example, Dave Recook mentioned, I think he said this publicly, that he surveyed his customers and asked them what their other favorite skincare brands are from besides Bamboo Earth, the skincare brand that he runs, right? That I used to work on. And he said like no brand came up more than 2% of the time. It's too good of a category. It's so hyper competitive that it creates a challenge. There's plenty of TAM, but the growth is tough because there's so much competition there that being a newcomer in the space, it's just really hard to get people's attention relative to all the other folks trying to get people's attention, especially with tactics like meta ads and all those things. So there's challenges on that side as well. So yeah, again, you could think about these things with some tweaks relative to your specific business, but that's the baseline kind of case. Okay. All right. Number two, let's talk about a different kind of brand that has this really particular quality to it, which is extreme LTV. Often, almost always, a subscription brand. Subscription brand with extreme LTV. And by extreme LTV, I mean, this is where you get towards like 200% in a year. So again, customer spends $100 today, they're going to spend another $200 throughout the rest of the year. But with LTV, extreme LTV brands, I've seen 300, 350. Like I've seen very big amounts of LTV. LTV that is so high that it's actually kind of hard to lose money on customer acquisition unless you are just really blowing money. Okay. Because the customer is just so valuable to you. Again, it's, and most of these higher LTV brands are also something like a personal care supplement, something like that, with pretty good margins as well, 60-65, somewhere at least. In those cases, now you have a different thing. You don't want to get a little better over time across the whole business and think about product release and promotional calendar, et cetera. In fact, you probably don't want to run sales at all, which reduces your need to output on the promotional calendar and or on the marketing calendar. And the reason you don't want to run sales at all is because you don't want to do anything that is going to jeopardize the value of subscription to your brand. Subscription becomes the core driver of how you create margin expansion in the business with all that LTV you're getting. And when you do that, you end up with this really incredible business. So you eliminate sales and promotions. You might have something at Black Friday or something like that, or some special offers that you cross sell to people or something, but you're not going to run, hey, for 3 days, the whole site's 40% off or whatever, because then all your subscribers are going to be annoyed at you and they're going to churn and they're going to switch and all those kinds of things. Instead, you want to do everything you can to smash your paid spend, right? Probably is the starting point. It's not the only answer here, but it's one of the things that you want to think really, really hard about. And really, this kind of brand, these subscription brands, is the ultimate case for D2C. D2C as a mechanism for business and for customers' interactions with the business makes so much sense for subscription brands where the product gets used on a repeatable, regular schedule. There's a you want it to show up and you never want to run out. And this is why supplements are so good, right? Because if it's a pill and I know I'm going to take the pill for 30 days, then a subscription is like awesome. It's a great customer service mechanism. It's like it's so perfect for the customer experience. If the pills just show up every 28 days and I never run out and it's just perfect for me, then I can just take them and keep going and I don't have to worry about reordering. Typically, I get a little discount or free shipping or something like that with it. And everybody's really, really happy. And now retail expansion doesn't make nearly as much sense. I mean, it might help at some point as a layer of your growth, but there's not really a great reason to do it. This is like, you know, ButcherBox, you think about, again, as sort of an extreme example of this, where they've got built a $500, $600 million business. They've been public about this. I heard some podcast with their CEO. And just like the whole thing is just built on boxes shipped to people. And what you see, and so yeah, Amazon may fit for this as well because subscribe and save is such a good thing. But what you really see here really clearly is that these businesses get very, very good at paid. And they also get very, very good at thinking about tactical improvement incessantly on their funnel. And so they're building offers all the time and they're testing landers all the time. And they're thinking about how can they do this, because every dollar additional they can spend on their customer acquisition produces for them, you know, $2-3, something like that, often over the course of a year, all the time. And so if you go back and listen to my episode with Jack Rubin, my second episode with him, really both of them are really great. I'll link both in the show notes. You hear him talk about this kind of thing. It's a subscription business that's growing really, really fast, really effectively. And when you hear Jack, what you hear is just like this extreme focus. And that's even what I titled the episode, on getting his offer right. Measuring carefully is another thing that these businesses do really well very often, is they analyze their LTV really carefully and measure really carefully what customers are more valuable to them and less valuable to them and what offers produce different amounts of value to them. And you know, you get really good at these paid channels, often again, starting with Meta. And over time, once you get to 30, 40, 50 million in revenue, something like that, you end up expanding out to other channels, because you can push Meta really far in these businesses, because again, many of them can exist at like a, you know, if the LTV is good enough at a 0.8, 0.7 ROAS or whatever at scale, and as long as they can float the cash, which over time can become possible through a bunch of different mechanisms, then they can just keep pouring that in there. And, you know, if you think about this from an ROI perspective, like a return on invested capital perspective, like as if a customer and a product was an investment vehicle for them, like a stock or something like that, you know, they're going to get 50%+ annualized return on those customers, even if they have to spend at a loss to start. And so it makes all the sense in the world to just get really, really good at investing in paid and incessant tactical improvement, often usually with less SKUs too, which also means you're not really working so hard to generate like incredible demand planning across a wide range of SKUs and a careful ordering strategy and developing a really good skill set on a hard game like that. Instead, what you're doing is keeping a few key SKUs in stock all the time. Make sure you have safety stock. Make sure subscribers never run out. Put a little extra cash into those things. Again, typically high margin for these subscription businesses. And also predictable revenue, because they're on subscriptions. You can tell generally when people are going to churn, et cetera. And therefore, the SKU management is easier. You don't have to go develop a bunch of skills there. You just, as you grow, you just keep renegotiating with your manufacturers as you do more volume and become more valuable to them and get better terms, get, you know, better pricing, all those things. But then each product release now becomes a new pipe, basically a new customer acquisition mechanism, so that as you add, you know, supplement B to your, or let's say you've got supplements A, B, and C already. Now, as you add supplement C, D, excuse me, sorry. So you've got A through C. Now, as you add supplement D, now at some point you can acquire a set of customers that you were not getting before. Now, you may not want to do that right away because you can take supplements A, B, and C really, really far, but that becomes the goal for product development. And sometimes additional product development can actually be a distraction from your core line in a way that is not that helpful, because again, the business is about acquiring as many subscribers across a few key areas as possible and getting really, really good at doing that. Again, that's what the Jack Rubin episode that I mentioned before reflects. I've talked to Jack about product expansion in that business. He has good ideas for products that he's sitting on, but he's going like, not yet. There's still so much further to go on this core product. I'm just going to keep pushing on that before I get distracted by doing something else. So that's number two, extreme LTV brands. If you've heard my ads for a while for more staffing and thought about the idea of adding talent from the Philippines to your business, but been nervous about integrating overseas talent, like managing things like time zones and languages and workflows and all of the kind of things that may make you have some hesitation, there is an amazing opportunity for you to take a next step without getting on the phone with more staffing quite yet if you're not ready to do that. And that is via a webinar that they're producing this coming Thursday. This coming Thursday, it's April 25th, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time. It's going to be a whole webinar led by Laura, the CEO of More Staffing, and Greg Carey, who's the founder of More Staffing, who founded the business in part because he had staffed his U.S.-based e-commerce business with Filipino employees, saw the value of it, and said, we've got to get this to more people. So he's been down this road. He knows what it's like to build a business around overseas talent, specifically in this case in the Philippines, and can tell you a lot about the pitfalls to avoid, the mistakes to avoid, as well as all of the advantages and the benefits to it. And so you could just learn more about it. I would really recommend you go and check that out. The link to the webinar is in the show notes for this episode. And of course, everything that More Staffing is doing at morenow.co/AF, morenow.co/AF is where you can find everything that they're doing, including associated with me. The webinar is going to be called Managing an International Remote Team in the E-commerce World, Massive Advantages and the Serious Pitfalls. So go check that out. Don't miss it. If you've thought about working with them, if you see the value of incredible talent from the Philippines at a lower cost than it would cost you to staff equivalent talent in the US, but a great price in the Philippines, which gets you good talent. If you've heard me make that pitch before, you've thought about it, but you're not sure, check out my show notes, go sign up for the webinar and learn more about how to manage this effectively. It's going to be really good. You're going to learn a lot. Go check it out. Brand type number three, bad LTV, like bad LTV. We're going to say sub 40%, sub 30%. And sometimes even worse than that, right? 20, 25%. I've seen plenty of times, and maybe even lower occasionally. Okay. But good TAM. So this is where you have a product that can reach a very wide range of people, like probably good, maybe even great margins. This kind of customer or this kind of product where you have something that is really, really mass appeal. And that's really the core driver of the business. And at that point, it becomes a demand capture and maybe demand generation game. Typically, if you have really, truly great total addressable market, and it's not so overly competitive, and maybe it even is pretty competitive, very often it's the case that what you are actually doing is tapping into existing demand. That's what you mean by good TAM in that case. It's not that you're creating demand, creating a category, et cetera. Instead, what you're doing is you are going into a category with existing demand and getting really good at capturing it. Again, if you want an example of this, think about Simple Modern. Now, Simple Modern, pretty bad margin. They would tell you that. They're pricing insulated water bottles very aggressively. And so they're a lower price. But what they got really good at, and again, there's a great episode that I did with Brian Porter that I'll link in the show notes a while back, who's the chief e-commerce officer at Simple Modern, that in the early days of that, the unlock for them was creating they saw the addressable market for water bottles. They did some things to test to figure that out. And then they figured out at the same time how to tap into that demand in a new, in a unique way, specifically with Amazon. So that's really not a D2C business first and foremost. It's an Amazon business first and foremost. And so in that respect, it's a little different than this. And for D2C brands, they actually may be doing category creation as long as the category is large enough to support. Like as long as there's enough like apparent demand for it. Again, you might think here a little bit about Kalo as a brand like this, probably not quite the level of total addressable market as some others. And there you've got extreme margin. Kalo silicone wedding rings, right? That's where I started working. And if you're watching this, I just showed you mine that I'm wearing right now. But again, a lot of wedding rings, a lot of people wearing wedding rings out there. And so part of the game was just get in front of those people as well as possible. In both cases, whether it's demand capture or demand creation, the game is get incredible at paid. Now, the game actually might be pick a different business because it doesn't have great genetic elements for a business. But if you have the right skill set here, you can still do awesome. And again, another example here would be Ridge Wallet, at least in the early days. Now, they've done a lot of product expansion since, but basically it was a low LTV product. Once you got a wallet, you only needed one. And what they got so good at was paid, including measurement on paid, understanding exactly, like if you're super high LTV, your paid measurement in terms of your like channel value, you know, how much value is Facebook producing, frankly, isn't as important because the customer's worth so much to you that it just doesn't matter that much. It's just not a big deal, right? Like ultimately, if you miss a little bit on one side or the other, who really cares? As long as you're basically within the range of right, because you have so much customer value that you can be in really good shape. You just don't need to measure that carefully. If you have to make all your money on first purchase and you are running ads and your whole way of reaching this very large market is with paid, and that's the main way you're doing it, then you got to think really carefully about not only if you want to grow a very big business doing this. And again, maybe you don't, maybe you say like, I'm comfortable building a $10 million business in this category. And I'm just going to take more margin per customer. I'm going to keep it not too complicated. And that's going to be good enough for me. That's great. I'm pro building a business with goals that make sense. Okay. For what you want to do with your life. But if you want to grow a very big business, what you have to do, among other things, is get incredible at maximizing each channel, understanding how each channel is producing value, measuring carefully the value that you're creating, and so on and so forth. If you can do that, then you can still build a really good business. And sometimes what I've seen is that people who are incredible at paid with these businesses can build really large businesses doing this. Another example of this would be Loop Earrings, which Taylor Holliday has pointed out a couple times recently. Not incredible financial core metrics to my knowledge in that business, but they've just gotten so good, 98th percentile at learning how to use paid across the organization, including operationally building up, like how do you bring in more and more people to produce more and more creative and manage more and more channels? And how do you give them targets to hit and incentivize them properly? All those kinds of things. And that can be, in this case also though, a good case for sales channel expansion. This is like, again, Simple Modern is another good example of this, where a brand like this that has really big TAM, a total addressable market, and is spending a lot of money on paid and getting really good at that. One thing they may end up wanting to do at some point is saying like, okay, we're creating all of this demand. We want to create some retail outlets where we can go capture more of it in more places, especially if you're a demand capture brand in a known category. Again, Simple Modern, like I said, is a good example here. Started on Amazon, added D2C, added mass retail, and that ended up producing a bunch of additional value for them, especially as they created a pricing advantage in some of those other channels to make it so that they're really well-loved and popular product in those channels, okay? So just again, if you don't have great LTV, and the key thing here is probably you need to get awesome at developing a skill set around paid, because now it's going to be your lifeblood to measure that stuff carefully, or at least have some other way to grow your business without LTV. And you need to be very clear about what that way is. And that's really the point here. If you don't have great LTV, stop trying to produce it and don't worry about hiring a retention manager to make it better. Like, you're not going to make it a lot better, very likely. It's just not going to work that well. Instead, accept it, deal with the fact that that's what you have, and get good in other areas. Okay. Number four, and this is kind of a subset of the bad LTV brand, but it's a really specific thing. And this, I'm going to call this the super seasonal gifting brand. Okay. Probably gifting related, not necessarily, right? If you think of like a Christmas tree farm or something like that, that would be a super seasonal brand that's not gifting. But a lot of these brands have the same thing, super, super seasonal or super gifting oriented, where you've got, and I think back to my time at FC Goods for a brand like this, bad LTV, decent margin, and you know, 75%, 80% of the year's sales, probably 80%, came in 2 30-day periods, which is the run-up to Father's Day and then holiday. It was overwhelmingly a gift product. People were not buying it for themselves. And as wallets made out of baseball gloves, if you don't know that story, wallets made out of old baseball gloves. And it was all about the run-up to Father's Day and the run-up and the Christmas period, basically, you know, holiday shopping, because that's what the brand was. And if you have this kind of brand, then what you need to think about is maximize those moments. It is all about, for a brand like that, your ability to generate and capture a whole bunch of demand in a very small period of time, which means in those periods of times, to maximize those moments, well, first and foremost, what it means is don't fight it. Seasonal headwinds and seasonal tailwinds are in many ways unfightable. I see brands make this mistake all the time. They have seasonal elements, and they may be less extreme than this holiday gifting example that I was thinking of here, but they'll overspend in bad moments or in poor seasonal moments because they are annoyed at how low their revenue is, and they're trying to fight it. And they're going, gosh, you know, our revenue 2 months ago was $3 million this month, and this month it's only 500,000. And if we could just make that bigger and get that 500 closer to 3 million, then this brand would be so much better. And my answer to that is, instead of trying to turn 500 into a million, you're going to have a much easier time turning 3 million into 3.5 million. I mean, just think about it as a percentage, right? Adding a half a million? Well, adding a half a million to a half a million is 100% growth. Adding a half a million to 3 million is what, like 17% growth? Is that right? Something like that, okay? It's so much easier because you have all those tailwinds. And the mistake I see all the time with these kinds of brands that have extreme seasonality or even a lot of seasonality or extreme or extremely gifting type brands is they go and they try to make all the rest of their year moments much bigger when they actually should focus more of their energy around how do I absolutely maximize those moments that we're in. That's the way I'm going to generate the most revenue possible. Hammer away. So when you get to those moments, your marketing calendar should be incredible. It should be awesome. It should be dialed to the day. You should know exactly what you're doing, what your promotional calendar is going to be, and how good it can be. Plan for it 4 months in advance. Make sure you don't miss the moment, okay? Hammer away at email and SMS. Capture, list building, whatever you have to do, and make sure those lists are ready to go for those time periods. And then once those time periods come, do not be afraid to over email or oversend in general. Why? Because you've got 30 days to get somebody's attention, very likely, or however long you have. Like, email them a lot over that period of time. And if they churn off your list, so be it. It's just the time to say, we're not going to worry about that. We're going to worry about instead capitalizing on and maximizing this moment while we have your attention in a very short period of time. And we're going to fight really hard to maintain your attention at the time it is by far the most valuable to us. Okay. Offers should be built and firing, and creative doing the same. And this is where the through the year work can really pay off. What you can do by running a bunch of different offers and launching new creative all year long is essentially, you know, maybe help your down periods, but even more than making your slow periods bigger, what you can do at this point instead is build up ammo for your top periods, right? So that's the goal. You're generating a whole bunch of creative and getting that into the ad account, and you're generating new offers and landers and whatever it is. And the point of doing those things is so that above everything else is so that once your conversion rate just goes up a whole bunch because the moment is bigger, which is what's going to happen when those moments come, suddenly every click you drive is way more valuable to you. And now if you have more ammo in terms of creative and offers, you can maximize that moment more. And so that's so much of the point of iterating on that stuff year round, is think about it in relative terms. It may not be performing that great right now, but you may be able to get way more spend out of them when the time comes. And that would be the goal of doing it. Okay. And I think manual bids here are your best friend for maximizing those moments. I've just watched this. I've got a couple brands. I've worked on plenty of brands that are like this, actually. And what I've seen over and over is that manual bids have this unique ability, especially if you're bidding one day click, to ride up and down the seasonality waves with a lot faster and easier than auto bidding does. Auto bidding, you're predicting these things. Manual bids will go capture a moment so much quicker and more responsively than other kinds of bidding. are. And the only time where this becomes a real problem is if you have like a true hard cutoff type thing, right? If, you know, from Black Friday to Cyber Monday, you know, if you have a 1 day Black Friday or 1 day Cyber Monday where you're going to have particularly excellent performance, then sometimes manual bids underreact a little bit to that. They'll underspend on the front end and overspend on the back end, right? So you'll get to Tuesday after Cyber Monday and still be spending too much, or you'll get to Friday and you don't spend quite enough. And so you might have to be a little bit careful and thoughtful about how you adjust that in real time. But otherwise, they're very good at writing up seasonal trends. As the conversion rate goes up and up each day, Meta is going to see that experience, like, you know, recognize that, and it's going to update its probabilistic forecasting model pretty quickly as long as you're spending enough to get lots of purchases going to your ad sets. And so, so manual bids can really help you capitalize on those moments. And then at the same time, they can also really help you slash your spend when the moment ends really quickly and responsively. So, okay, that's number four, super seasonal, super gifting type brand. And number five, I'm going to call this one. This one could actually fit a number of these different categories, but there's a specific thing here that's important. I'm going to call this the subculture native brand. Okay. And this is a brand where the TAM is probably lower, but there is a unique group of people who will particularly love your product. And this is not like typically, you know, a brand that's trying to make itself part of a subculture, though that can be really good too, right? Again, I think back to my time at Kalo. We went really hard on CrossFit as a subculture to invest in. Okay. And that is fine. And that worked really well. We had a great experience with that, learned a lot in that process. Okay. But it's not, I mean, and there is a unique use case for Kalo in CrossFit, but that's not even what I'm thinking of here. If I could take back my time working with Slick Products, a brand that made wash products for off-road vehicles, specifically dirt bike and like ATV, UTV, those kinds of things, the thing I would do probably really differently is think harder about just how aggressively I could invest in the key subcultures there in the right ways. And in that respect, you can still run Meta broad targeting because Meta's going to go find those people based on all kinds of stuff, right? But this is also, though, where you've got the best case for organic, I think, where there's a community, where you can really work on producing content and producing community around in your subculture and become part of it. Again, the sort of extreme super example of this that, again, Taylor Holliday's highlighted a couple times recently is Missouri Star Quilt Co., where they just own quilting. So far as I can tell, I don't know anything about quilting, but so far as I can tell, they are just the players. In fact, so much so that when I did my episode with Taylor, which if you haven't listened to, you should go check that out. And Taylor in that episode talks a little bit about this story. And so if you want to hear that very early in the episode, you can hear about that. A friend of mine was listening to that episode and she reached out to me and said, I can't believe you are tangentially connected to the people who run Missouri Star Quilt Co. You have to understand, of all the non-celebrity celebrities that I would want to meet in the world, like the woman who leads their content and leads that business would be like my dream. I watch so much of her content all the time. And that is the perfect encapsulation of the kind of thing I'm thinking about here. The kind of brand that could produce somebody who is incredibly important to one person, but I've never heard of her. I have no idea who this person is. And she's getting tons and tons of views. That is a great case for building organic content that serves a local significant community and just makes yourself established in the space. And so the growth here can be paid for sure, but because you're not really aimed at TAM in the same way, you're not trying to reach the most people and expand forever. Instead, you should be thinking about how that goes along with other growth elements in the business. And if you think that means you can't grow that big or good of a business, you are wrong. Because what can happen instead is though you don't necessarily reach a huge swath of people, you can create massive profitability with a core group of customers. And again, that Missouri Star Quilt Company is a good example of this, where customers are so incredibly valuable and keep coming back and keep using your product and keep telling all their friends about it because you just have become such a key and important player in the space and everybody knows you. And at some point what happens is you generate leverage in terms of your profitability in your brand. You create margin expansion in the business by making it so there's like massive word of mouth. And word of mouth, I mean, quote unquote, it may be actual word of mouth. Like I tell a friend about this business who also is into the same thing as me. That definitely happens in those businesses. In fact, it happens much more in a business like that than in others. But also it might be sort of like essentially organic shareability, where recommendation engines start serving you content related to the thing that you're interested in, and it's content from the brand. And therefore you spend a very low amount of money on ads relative to other businesses in the same space. For that kind of business, the case really is clear for generating a serious organic presence and becoming core to it and really investing in the community in every way you can. This is where like subculture influencers, subculture charities, subculture retailers, if they exist, right? Again, the Missouri Star Quilt Co. one basically became that, but I'm sure there's, you know, retailers that would carry quilt stuff that those folks would go to. I think about this also when we started doing this at Slick Products, when I was working with Slick, making those, we started to get some retailers within the subculture, and that made a lot of sense for that brand. And probably we should have been more aggressive about that earlier on, thinking about how do we make sure that the places where dirt bikers and ATV riders shop is a place where Slick is, and may not be massive. You know, it's not Target necessarily, right? That's not the point. The point isn't to get into a big box retailer. The point is to be in the retailers that these people go to over and over and over again, and to be a presence there. And that's where you invest in those communities in every possible way that you can, show you're really a part of it, and you actually have to really be a part of it in that case. So to recap, okay, five types of brands, and there again are probably more. I don't claim this is an exhaustive list, but the solid margin, solid LTV, good TAM, like the steady brand builder, okay, that could be often apparel, personal care, those kinds of brands. Okay, that's number one. Get better at everything all the time. Number two, extreme LTV subscription brands. That's where getting incredible at your funnel and measuring the value of different customers and efforting against those becomes the core of the business. Number three, bad LTV, good TAM. This is where you have to develop super muscles around paid, and maybe also generate sales channel expansion with mass retail, Amazon, those kinds of things. Number four, the super seasonal gifting brand. The key there, don't fight the seasonality. Instead, lean into it. Let the tailwinds push you further and faster, and don't try to make up ground on the headwinds. You won't do it. Number five, the subculture native brand. That's the brand that has a specific niche, specific subculture. Get really good at being there in presence, and probably invest a little bit more in organic content. Get good tactically at leaning on recommendation engines to get your content in front of your customer and go from there. Those are five different kinds of brands. And here's the key above all of this. Know which kind of brand you are, develop the muscles you need within that. If you can do that, then you can create a really good business no matter which one of those core are. A lot of you probably got into it because you love the product, you love the customer, you love the culture, not just because you were thinking, you know, pure financially about how you generate a really good business. Something else brought you to this business. And you can probably be successful in a lot of these. You just need to know where to invest your time and effort and dollars. All right, that's it for the show today. Thanks so much for watching, for listening. As usual, I have a great episode coming up. My next Opening the Books is going to be me coaching someone through a product release. You are not going to want to miss that. Don't forget to go check out my sponsor, More Staffing. Virtual assistants can be helpful. Virtual professionals can change your business. Build a lean OPEX e-commerce business in part by hiring incredible talent in the Philippines. You will not regret it. They're a great partner. Go to morenow.co to go check them out. I've been working with them for a while. I staff my business with them. You know about them. Go do it. If you want to respond to me, I'd love to hear about it. Maybe you've got a business type that I didn't mention. You can email me at podcast@ajfgrowth.com. You can comment on this video. I usually respond to comments. And you can find me on X at Andrew J. Ferris. You can also, what else can you do? Oh, you can go to ajfgrowth.com. If you want to work with me, see anything that I'm doing, ajfgrowth.com is the place to find all of that. Again, don't forget to subscribe wherever you're watching or listening to this. I've got all kinds of great content coming, a bunch of interviews. I also have a follow-up with Nazrin Jafari coming soon with my first Opening the Books guest. I've been working with her for a while. We've got a lot to talk about. So that's it. Thanks so much for watching, for listening. I'll see you next time.